Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Recovered Secrets by Jessica R. Patch. A blank memory, a new life, but her borrowed time just ran out. 2 years after Grace Thackeray washed up on a small-town Mississippi riverbank, she has the first clue about the life she doesn't remember. Someone wants her dead. And while search and rescue director Hollis Montgomery's determined to protect her, the secrets of her past are darker than they expected. Can the bond between Grace and Hollis survive her true identity and an assassin?
And welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today I have Jessica R. Patch. She writes inspirational contemporary romance and romantic suspense. She has prolific writer. She has a lot of books, and we're going to have a lot of fun talking about writing and secrets and amnesia. I think it's going to be a real fun time. So thanks for joining me, Jessica.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So we were talking before we started recording about some kind of threads that some romantic suspense lines have, such as amnesia. And you've written your new book, or your most recent book out is Recovered Secrets. And my my most recent romantic suspense is Dangerous Christmas Memories, all about losing your mind. So I just, let's talk about that. I mean, amnesia is kind of a fun thing to write about. At least I found so. How did you like it?
I liked it. This is actually my first amnesia book.
Okay.
My first book about amnesia was a trade length book that I pitched at my very first writing conference, and that's the book that garnered representation with my agent. It's not published, but I think all the time about sprucing it up and, you know, pitching it again or publishing it indie. But so this is actually my second amnesia story. It's a suspense, and the first one was just a contemporary romance. So this was fun to write, for sure.
It was, because, you know, I think about memories, and I'm currently listening to a book about kind of psychology, memories, The Body Keeps the Score, about trauma. I know, it's like a heavy topic, but it's been fascinating just to think about, you know, recovered memories, repressed memories, and, you know, how trauma can play with that. And as suspense writers, you know, there has to be some sort of traumatic event.
Absolutely.
So having someone forget that or repress that, I mean, the average person may think that doesn't really make a lot of sense, but science backs us up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it has to be plausible. They will fact check it. And I let you know that this is or isn't. So I use the same kind of amnesia in Recovered Secrets, retrograde amnesia. So my heroine couldn't remember anything to do with episodic memory, but her muscle memory is still there. So she may not know what the word bread means, but if she was a professional bike rider, you could put her on a bike and she could just ride.
Yeah.
Without having any memory that she knew how to ride a bike. So that was pretty fun and played in really well to who she was and the skills that she had. And she would try to, maybe I'm this or maybe I'm that, because I'm really good at this and that. And then when it all got put together and she discovered who she really was, it was nothing at all what she expected.
Of course, because, you know, we can't have, you know, we need to have those twists and turns to keep our readers interested and to keep myself interested, because I think that's why I kind of, you know, I had written some contemporary, just, I don't know what they were called, you know, books that will never see the light of day, and we're all very grateful for that. We all have those, because that's how we learn to write, and we try on our different kind of writing personas. Am I a woman's poem? It's like I'm a woman's fiction, I guess you would call it, but I am definitely not a woman's fiction. I'll leave that to the professionals. Kind of thing. But I do like I always kept wanting to add in some little suspense moments, and I'm like, my agent said, you should just write romantic suspense. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I should just do that. Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, where was this? That's what we have agents for.
Right, so how did you kind of, Yeah, I know. Sometimes they're like spot on, more times than we'd like to admit, right? So how did you get into writing romantic suspense? Because I see that you've written some like contemporary romance as well.
So I go back and forth. I am a mystery buff since Scooby-Doo. So I have loved mysteries from the time I was little bitty, and I gravitate toward mystery and thrillers. That's kind of my personal preference. If I'm in a library or a bookstore, I'm going to usually go toward a whodunit with a romance.
Yeah.
So when I wrote my first book, it was a romance with a mystery involved, a little bit of a whodunit. And that I found that so much fun. And then I kind of wrote some contemporary romances, and I went back and forth because I liked them both. And I guess you could say it was kind of a branding in a sense when my agent said, you know, why don't you, there's a contest for Love Inspired, and I had asked her about it. I was like, do you think I should do that? And she said, well, you don't really have to enter the contest. That's the perks of having an agent. I'll just send a proposal in. So I had originally started with a contemporary romance, and she said to me, she said, you know what, they're really looking for suspense right now. You might have a better shot at it, and you've written several of them that we pitched for trade length. Why don't you try that? And so I wrote the manuscript, because you do have to have a full manuscript.
Yep.
On your first book for them. So I wrote the manuscript and set up the proposal for two books. And within maybe 60 days, I had a contract. So it went fairly fast.
Yes, yeah. And it's nice because we...
Yeah.
Right. And we've had, you know, and some, and for those of you who are aspiring writers or just readers, you know, most of the time when it's your first book, especially your first book ever or your first book for a particular line, like Love Inspired Suspense, which has a very, they're formulaic in a positive, good way. So they want to know that you can hit all the marks that they need for their audience. You do have to write the whole thing first, which it's almost a catch-22. So you put the time in, but on the plus side, you can usually get, you know, sometimes you get published a lot quicker because the book is done.
And I'm pretty sure you have to, it seems like the first three books, they only sell on a manuscript. And
yeah.
Then after the third book, they'll start buying off of a proposal.
Yeah.
Which is easy and it's not easy, because if you're a seat-of-the-pants writer, if you just make it up as you go, which that's how I was originally, having a manuscript is fantastic, because once it's finished, then you write your proposal and send it in. You can write your synopsis. But
yeah.
Then when you start selling on proposal, you have to know at least most of your story, because they want a full synopsis, and that's like about 7 to 10 pages. They want that strong. They want to know that you have a good GMC, motivation conflict. They want to know that your romantic conflict is going to play out in your spiritual thread. So it can get tricky if you're a seat of the pantser, but eventually after you do it so many times, it does get easier. And they're really good, at least in my case, they're really, really good about letting you kind of tweak your story. Because the one she's going to get ready now to receive, she started out agoraphobic, my heroine, and
That's a little bit of a big change there, Jessica.
Like, basically the story's the same. She just will leave her house. So, but they're pretty good about that, as long as you're keeping it basically the same and you have a good story. So,
yeah, and I think that's, for new writers or readers out there, I mean, it can be, sometimes the story just, you can write the best proposal, and sometimes the characters just don't want to do what you tell them to do.
That is the truth. They can be so stubborn.
They can be, and I know that sounds weird to people who maybe aren't writers, but, you know, your characters, they do become alive, because we want, and you want that as a reader, because if not, the story would be dry as dust, and you'd be like, I can't relate to these people. What are they, cut from cardboard?
Right.
So they need to be alive to us, and so we do talk about them, and we do talk about them in the sense that, yeah, my hero was going to be not able to leave the house, and I found out she had to leave the house. She told me that, so I had to let her out. kind of a thing, and that's kind of a real thing, because you made her real. You made her, you know, a real person as opposed to a character. which nobody wants to read about characters.
Nobody does. If we can't connect with our characters, then our readers aren't going to experience or connect with them either, with our characters either.
So how do you connect with your characters? I mean, do you have a specific way that you go about developing them, or you can share any secrets with us?
Well, a lot of times they just pop up in my head, and it's a snippet. I can see them visually. I can't always make out their face. I know it sounds weird. I can't make out their face, but I know exactly what they look like. So if I were to go into like Google Images, once I land on an actor or whoever, I'm like, yep, that's them. That's who I'm seeing in my head. But they usually start out with dialogue, and they have some kind of conversation, and then it just kind of builds from there, typically. As far as writing a suspense, I usually start with my villain, and I flesh out my villain. Who are you? Why are you doing this? And how are you connected to these people? Because I feel like in my case, if I know who the villain is and everything about him or her, then I can work my other characters around them, and I can hide him or her much better if I work around him or her first.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about it that way. My villain does kind of come to me, and then they talk to me, and then I realize
they keep you up.
They do, and I realize I've been leaving rabbit trails. I'm like, oh, you know, I literally had a book where I was like, oh, that's why I wrote that.
Yeah,
like subconscious just kind of inserted this in there, and then later I'm like, oh, yeah, I know. And it's not like I'm saying I'm any kind of psychic or anything. It's just interesting the way your brain kind of on the surface, and then you have the deeper part, and I found that just very helpful. As a suspense writer.
It's extremely helpful.
Yeah.
And those little nuggets get passed in there, or a minor character jumps on the page, and you realize by the end of the story, oh, the next book's about you. Well, I didn't realize there was going to be a next book, but then there is, and then there's the next, and the next thing you know, you have a series.
Right. Yes, definitely. And one of my favorite things to do is to think about how to kill people or have them die.
Yeah, it is.
I know. My husband always gives me strange looks when I'm like, yeah, I'm looking at poisons. And just so you know, in case Google History has a little weird stuff on it, no need to worry. I still love you.
Surprise, the FBI show up. It's no big deal.
Yeah, I know.
That's where you need to start using the dark web browser, the private.
I think about that. I do. And I'm like, yeah, I don't, you know, they can, if they Google me at all, they'll find out I'm a writer. And are they really gonna? No, I don't think so. But what is kind of the weirdest way that you've killed someone in your novels, or they died in your novels?
Well, the weirdest way they've actually died, or how I've tried to kill them?
Either one.
Well, I have got kind of ingenious, and I've used a wood chipper.
Oh.
And I threw my hero in a wood chipper, and it was going down, and he had to rescue her out of there, and my editor told me it was too violent. It's a line. And I thought, you know what? I have done so much research on industrial tub grinders that I'm not letting this useless knowledge go to waste, so I just reworked the scene so I could still use the wood chipper.
Oh, good.
So I think that was probably the oddest thing that came to mind. And then I impaled a villain on a tree in a tornado.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. I use an anthrax substance in one of my books. I haven't published that one yet, but that was kind of fun.
Good.
I live in the suburbs of Washington D.C., so you know that. Like, yeah, everyone's pretty terrified about that. But that's a great way to send something through the mail and have a couple people die. And that was, yes, exactly. Well, we are getting close to the end of our time. Is there anything about, you mentioned that your next series was about cold cases. I love cold cases. If I could watch every show ever made about a cold case, I would. Why are we so fascinated with cold cases?
I think we're just people of mystery. We're made to be curious. We're made to ask questions and answer questions. And when we can't find answers, it bothers us. And I think that that's why we're so interested in cold cases, because there has to be an answer. And just like people love jigsaw puzzles and mysteries, we need an answer. We need to figure out why this happened and how it happened and why couldn't anybody figure it out. And I think it's just another mystery and a puzzle that fascinates people. And also that, you know, justice is escape, you know, and people, yeah. We have a really thirst for justice. We want to see people, you know, brought to justice, and we want to see vindication for those victims. They deserve that. And I think that's why we're so interested and curious about cold cases.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, it is, there is, some, even no matter if it's 70 years go by or whatever, you know, I mean, to me, there's still that closure, because you see that families, even if the principal people are not no longer with you, it still leaves a legacy in their family.
Absolutely.
You know, we don't know what happened to grandma, you know, or auntie right. such and such, or someone was accused of something and never tried or, you know, or acquitted, and so this pall hangs over the family until they can prove someone else did it or something. I think there is that satisfaction with cold cases. So good luck with your new series. It sounds great.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I've had a really good time. It went fast.
It did. So thank you. And I will definitely have you back again sometime, Jessica.
Sounds great. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I've been chatting with Jessica R. Patch. She writes inspirational contemporary romance and romantic suspense. And you are going to hear a excerpt from one of her latest books, Recovered Secrets. I hope you join me next time.
Now an excerpt from Recovered Secrets by Jessica R. Patch. Inside the inn, Grace snagged a leftover cinnamon roll. She deserved it. She also deserved to get clean. Her face was a mess, muddy and streaked from the battle a little over an hour ago. Hollis, I'm going to take care of all this filth. When I'm done, we can ride back to the facility. I need to look at the radars, and I know you want to ride out and inspect the waters around the levee. Hollis finished off his roll and nodded.
You really should. You smell.
She gasped. I do not. Laughing, he held his mug up in a salute and winked.
Maybe not, but you do look like you wallowed in mud.
She shuddered. She had, and not by choice.
I didn't mean to upset you.
His eyes held concern. You didn't. I just need to clear the gunk off my face. She headed for the kitchen door.
Holler if you need anything.
Her place from the kitchen was only about 15 to 20 feet. Grace waved and made her way out the back door and down the sidewalk lined with flower pots, the flowers wilting at the merciless and unending rain. It was overcast, but warm. Unlocking her door, she stepped inside and tensed. Something wasn't right. Pausing in the entryway, she grabbed an umbrella from the wicker basket. Nothing appeared out of sorts, but the eerie sensation skittered across her skin. Everything inside her screamed a warning. Should she scream for Hollis? The window in the inn's kitchen was open. He'd hear. Grace surveyed the open floor plan. To the left of the kitchenette was her bedroom and bathroom. Inching toward her room, her heart galloped. Was she being ridiculous? She towed her bedroom door further open and stepped inside, caught a whiff of musk. The smell zinged along her memory, pulling something familiar forward, but it was blurry. She inched into the bathroom, switched on the light, and felt a presence behind her. Turning, a figure loomed. Throat constricting, adrenaline racing, she didn't wait for him to tackle her. She went on the offensive and rushed him, but he dodged her. She swung around, and his back was to her. Grace instinctively thrust out the umbrella,
the hook catching around his neck like a noose. She yanked, choking him, forcing him backward and toward her.
You always knew how to make an entrance,
he sputtered, and held his arms out to the side.
I'm not here to hurt you.
Then what are you here for? My valuables? I'll give you a hint. I don't have any.
Where on earth did that bravado and snark come from, or her reaction to use that umbrella as a weapon?
I'm turning around.
She recognized his voice now that her ears weren't buzzing, but her heart was going wild and she itched to run. Run fast and hard. With hands raised, Peter Rainey from Breakfast faced her.
You can put the umbrella down, really?
She only lowered it.
I thought you were dead.
He shook his head, eyes wide.
But then, I was sitting in my recliner 3 weeks ago, and there you were on the national news, in the background while the SAR chief told the world they'd found the little girl their team had been searching for. It was on the news almost nightly. I was in shock. Then I was confused.
He was confused? How had he seen her on TV? Hollis had made sure to steer her clear from the media during that hunt for their pastor's little girl. Her scars kept him protective of her, and she appreciated that. She hadn't found that little girl for the recognition anyway.
Why did you settle down in this podunk town? Why did you pretend not to know me earlier? And why are you volunteering with search and rescue and living under a tin roof?
Why are you under my tin roof? I don't have any cinnamon rolls.
Now probably wasn't the time to go comedic and dry, but a memory teetered on the edge of her mind. She used this kind of banter to do something.
What?
He chuckled.
Always loved that snark, too. I know you hate me.
She did?
I'm here to make amends, Max, even though you have every right to stomp me into the ground for betraying you.
Max? Was that her name? Short for Maxine or something? She glanced at the door and her hands shook. Peter spotted it.
Are you afraid?
She was working hard to conceal it. Should she not be?
Well, you did betray me. Care to elaborate?
If she told him her brain had deflated like a balloon and she was at a loss for memory, he might try to hurt her or clam up. He'd asked why she pretended not to know him. Well, he hadn't acted like he knew her either, so he was hiding something. He was her only link to her past. She had to play the game for as long as she could.
Look, I'll tell you everything, but I'm not the only one who knows you're alive.
Join the club. She had two creeps coming for her already. Peter sighed.
I can help you. I know you have no reason to trust me, but I promise I'm telling you the truth. I just need to know where Dr. Sayer is. I can help her. Help you.
Her. The doctor had a name and gender. Good, she could work with this. But could she work with this man? What if he tried to betray her again? How did he betray her before? By beating her up and leaving her for dead?
Her hands wouldn't stop shaking, and she bit down on her lip to hide the tremble.
What if she didn't know any more self-defense moves?
I didn't.
He paused, cocked his head and surveyed her. It gave her the shivers, but she tried to hold fast. Her fingers jittered, causing the umbrella to bounce. He watched it, then let his gaze slowly roll back over her face, lock onto her eyes again.
Where is Dr. Sayer?
I can't say.
What's my name?
He was onto her somehow. The fear.
The fear was tipping him off that something was wrong. Peter. He narrowed his eyes and took a step forward. She took a step back, and he paused, tipped his head to the side.
What's your name?
Busted. Would he kill her now? Why do you ask? She tossed a glance at the open door and took another step toward it. Peter matched every step forward for every one she took in retreat, surprise in his eyes.
I thought you were toying with me this morning, somehow, so I didn't say anything.
But you weren't up to anything sneaky. You don't know me.
And you don't know you either. That's why you never came back.
Peter seemed to be getting an aha moment. Grace could use one.
It was all lies.
He'd clearly uncovered a truth. Is my name Max? She asked, her head spinning. Did she try to run, or did she trust this man who admitted to betraying her? He half grinned.
No, it's a nickname. Mad Max.
Mad Max? Am I crazy or something?
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.